opportunity to welcome you all on our portfolio committee meeting on agriculture, land reform and rural development, and also take this opportunity to welcome all the officials of the department who are with us on this portfolio committee meeting. We have three agendas on our program, and I will defer to two, where we will be getting a briefing from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development on the Plant Health Phytosanitary Bill, as well as the Deeds Registries Amendment Bill. We have also received honorable members on Wednesday a request from the department that we should nominate candidates who will serve onto the ARC, and the closing date I should highlight is today, end of business day. So I would suggest the honorable members send in their nominations directly to the department before 4 o'clock this afternoon. If you have any recommendations and nominations you'd like to make, please ensure those names get to the secretariat so that we can send the names through to the department. Allow me to therefore, honorable members, take this opportunity to welcome to the platform the officials of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development to take us through on the first presentation, which will be on Plant Health Phytosanitary Bill. If you can enlarge the slide so we can see it fully on slide mode.
Recording in progress.
Honorable Chairperson, good morning, and I hope I am audible. And good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee. I've been battling, but on my side, it looks like it's full screen. I'll try and get assistance, but for now.
Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson.
We are seeing two slides on the screen. If you can just enlarge it into slide mode so
Okay.
that we only see one slide per time.
Okay.
because it is showing the slide, and then on the side it is also showing the next slide that you're gonna. So it makes it difficult to follow the presentation when we don't see it in full size.
If I may ask the secretariat to also load, because maybe it's my gadget, Honorable Chair, with your indulgence, they can load. I'll stop sharing so it can be shared on their side.
All right. Can Ralph and the secretariat assist in flighting the presentation so that we can be able to see it in full? Thank you. Now we can see it. You may proceed, Intadessa Rache.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity. This is the Plant Health Bill, or we even call it phytosanitary bill. I will explain with your indulgence, because the network is not that good. I ask that I switch off my camera. The bill, phytosanitary bill, the purpose really is to take the portfolio committee through what we intend to do as a department. And as a start, the question is, why this bill? Honorable members are already aware that plant health, unlike animal health, plant health is not a concurrent mandate. So it's a preserve of the national department, and what we do, therefore, at the national level, has got to ensure that it covers and that everything that happens as far as the plant or arable farming is concerned. The key reasons why the amendment is that the current law that we have as a department, which regulates the plant health, predates 1994, so it is the Agricultural Pest Act of 1983, and it predates the constitution of the country. And at the time when it was... excuse me, Chair, I think somewhere I'm getting the feedback. So at the time when the Agricultural Pest Act was promulgated, the focus was not really on trade, and as all members know better than me, that the status of the country at the time. So the focus was really on not on trade, but was on the control of pests within the Republic. Yes, it continued. Now we, South Africa, trades with its counterparts in other countries, and for that to happen, there has to be a relationship as far as our law is concerned and the laws of other countries. The WTO World Trade Organization has got bodies, statutory bodies. One of such that could be familiar to honorable members for animal health is used to be called OIE, which is in French to refer to World Organization on Animal Health. The plant health version of OIE is called the International Plant Protection Convention. So this body of the World Trade Organization ensures that the work around the world, all members, all countries that are signatories to WTO, are able to negotiate and discuss issues of plant health in a more centralized forum, and are able, therefore, to have scientific discussions which relates therefore to, as you see, the phytosanitary methods. Maybe before I confuse them, honourable members, we interchangeably, as members would have seen, interchangeably use the word plant health or phytosanitary. The difference really are not much. Phytosanitary, as you think of SPF, sanitary and phytosanitary. So the P and the SPF is for phytosanitary and phyto meaning plant. So sanitary meaning just the hygiene and ensure that free of diseases and free of insects. So that is the sanitary part. So phyto is animal, a plant and plant product free of diseases and free of insects, that's pests. So that's basically, so at the end, towards the end, when the law goes and the committee considers the bill going forward, we will make the determination on with regard to whether this becomes plant health bill or phytosanitary bill and later, but we are interchangeably using the words for now. The difference really are not, there aren't any significant difference. We defining this specific acronyms or this concept for with the purpose of ensuring that as we will be taking through the panel, the members through the presentation, we will see this concept appearing or reappearing. Quarantine pest, this is an insect that, or it can even be a disease, that is not known to occur to a country. So if we say a pest is a quarantine pest to South Africa, we are saying this pest does not occur in South Africa, or is not known to occur. Two things happen when a pest is not known to occur. It would not have what you call natural enemies. So it means because it would be new, it will not be, if you look at the food chain, so it will not have other organisms that pest on it or that feed it. So its numbers might therefore might increase and as they increase, we may not be able to control them because, secondly, we would not have a chemical control for it. So a pest, then if you see the way throughout the person is in quarantine, it means it would be, if it's a pest or a disease, it means it's that which does not occur and we do not have any means of control. We wouldn't have because it does not occur. And it is called quarantine because it may not have a natural enemy. So any organism, as you members know, has its natural enemy that is the feed on it or prey upon it. That way it helps to control it and then the numbers becomes manageable. But as I've spoken to, regulated pests means there are those that may not necessarily be quarantine pests, but they all of them in the main are regulated. But when you say a pest is regulated, it means there's a focus, specific focus on from government, because we do not want it to occur, and would even, this is part of the intention of this act, we want to empower the department minister to be able to demarcate areas and also that certain crops may not be farmed with, and demarcate or also make measures regarding the control of pests. So regulated means it's within the focus of government, and as and when it occurs, government comes in. Honourable members would remember the situation we had with we have already now with the false prickly moth in Europe. They are saying a false prickly moth is a quarantine pest to them, so they are saying they do not have. So regulated pest means it's a pest that may not necessarily it may have natural enemies, but it might be a pest of agricultural economic importance. So government has got to come in and control it. You members would know of the locust control at the moment. Second slide. So problem statement basically is simply that we want to be able to update this act, which is was enacted in 1983. And it's got a lot of things that, its reach or its coverage does not cover a lot of things that are now 2023. having to be covered as far as agricultural trades in or trade in agricultural products of plants or origin or in plants themselves. So at the moment, this Agricultural Pest Act, it does not cover the areas that it does not recognize, for instance, the International Plant Protection Convention, because this was in 1997, and there are standards that have got to be adhered to by all countries. This would call IPPC standards, which is IPPC, obviously, that the abbreviation for International Plant Protection Convention. And again, the IPPC of the World Trade Organization expects of all countries that are signatories to the World Trade Organization to have their local version of the IPPC. So their local version becomes, in our case, it becomes National Plant Protection Organization. This is what we call competent authority. So when discussions about trade and trade negotiations happen, we would then have a discussion happening between competent authority of South Africa and competent authority of the other country. So it will be the local version of the IPPC, which will be called National Plant Protection Organization. This in the main is formed by government officials from different spheres or different fields that are connected in as far as edible plant health is concerned. So it will be officials from agronomists, it will be officials from plant pathologists, it will be officials from inspection services, it will be officials from the chemical or pesticide. So this forms this NPPO of South Africa. At the moment, we've got NPPO of South Africa, but it is not referred to or is not enabled by any provision of the Agricultural Pest Act. So that's one of the reasons why we want to have this act repealed and replaced with Plant Health Act. The current act, lastly, does not make provision for export control. So like I said, it was mainly designed in 1983 for control of pests and diseases, insects, or even any other organisms that would feed on crops and plants and plant material and disrupt agricultural production. It had no, because of that, because it was not linked to WTO, it only has, its focus was only based on South African control and for pests within the state of South Africa. So this act, therefore, is no longer relevant to the current dispensation. Next slide. Basically, this is what happens, and it's one of those casualty bills because it has traversed the whole route, and at some point, having been to different committees, portfolio committee, it went through all the way until at the time when we thought we were ready to have it assented into law, and then there was the political cycle changing. So we are where we are now. So we are going this route that we have traversed before, and that means we've had to get a new socio-economic impact and assessment report again, because we also went to the office of the chief state law advisor again, because of course of the unfortunate situation that happened with regard to the political cycle. Next slide. So what this fixture do is, this is the Agricultural Pest Act of 1983. Basically, it's about, like I said, pest control, and it's through regulations. We've been trying to get it to align to the current dispensation, and we've been able to have things uploaded from 1994 to date. But things get more difficult as and when things change. So at the moment, we members know that importation of goods has got to be through a permit. Members already know that those who fly international, and especially those who go to Germany and some part of Europe would see at the airport there are dogs, the canine unit which belongs to this department, checking for fruits and plants and plant products in the luggage of officials. If you take that scenario that I've just mentioned of the airport with that of other countries, you realize in South Africa all we can do is to confiscate the apple or the fruit and throw it away. We don't have any legal follow-up mechanism. So even the fee that this act speaks of is about 300,000 or something. So it's not, does not, for lack of a better word, that it's not at the standard of other laws around the country, where, as you members would know, if you are found to have controlled products without permits, these people can even be jailed, and there's a lot of hefty fines. So at the moment, we do not have the legal provision to impose fines that would be deterrent. Next slide. Basically, this is what this is going to be quick. This is the section that when with the repeal. So when we repeal this act, some of the provisions would remain the same, but because the work that this bill brings into the 1983 Act, it's more than 50% of the entire Act. We've just had to repeal the whole Act, but some provisions, those that are still applicable, we will retain, but as members know, the magnitude of the new provisions are more than 50% of the old provisions, hence the application to have the Act 1983 repealed in its entirety. First gap there, by the central regulatory system of South Africa, which we do not have, so it would then be brought in, and this, once that's done, would then be able to speak from enabled by a provision of law of our Act to speak to areas of regulatory control. This is about import, this is about export as well. So at the moment, like I said, this Act only speaks mainly to import, not export. Next slide. So this is, like I said, already specified this, that to provide measures to prevent the introduction, like I said, an establishment or spread of pests, regulated or quarantine pests. Quarantine pests, one of the members, we should not have. So when you see all these countries having border security or quarantine services, they have got only one intention, and that is to make sure that a pest that or a disease that we do not have in their country, in our country, does not get introduced. And the most vectors or the most medium of introduction of pests and diseases is human beings. So as we travel, because we travel the world unintentionally, traveling, and also as and when we open the country for visitors from other countries, tourism is found to be one of the most challenging areas for our sector, because it is through tourism that pests and diseases are introduced. So this is one of the main reasons why we would want to ensure that we safeguard the country against introduction of regulated pests or quarantine pests. Regulated, because we would have them and we'd have them under control, and we would have them not occurring at certain areas in our country. But if through travel that gets introduced, it then changes how we do things, and it may affect agricultural production and negatively affect obviously the economy and the food security. So in turn, once the bill is in place, we'll then be able to ensure that we've got sufficient regulation and laws as far as traveling is concerned, and the current export markets will then be able to service them easily. And when we meet for opening new markets, when we meet with our counterparts, what you call competent authorities of other countries, we meet there NPPOZA. And we do not have a legitimate NPPOZA because our law does not make provision for it. But we have to make do with what we have to be able to marshal ourselves into a structure which is equivalent to an NPPO of South Africa, NPPOZA, because we needed to have that in order for us to enable trade. Next slide. So the new bill, in the main, would provide, as I've said, for the fungicide defensive measures to prevent introduction, establishment, and spread of regulated pests. Members would see here that I'm not referring to quarantine, because quarantine is not supposed to even be there. Regulated pests will then have to control in the country. This bill gives rise automatically to X36, as far as it will then connect to X36 in the form of registering for products, agricultural remedies in the form of pesticides in this specific case. So what am I saying? If somebody or a company wants to register a chemical pesticide, first we've got to check if what that pesticide intends to control. So that process, then that's where the linkage, you can see the register of X36 of 1947 will then link up with the register of Plant Health Act to see if indeed there isn't one, there isn't any products already, and to assist towards the registration in the event of there be no product to control specific pests. The definitions, this will be so basically we just finish this already. We are in the spirit of the ensuring that we ensure or we have designed our law in such a way that it already conforms, as in law, talking to subordinate laws of the Agricultural Pest Act. So if those are the regulations that affect to, we just make sure that we make do with what we have. And with this new bill, we'll then be able to have these definitions clearly provided for by the Act, and therefore enforceable. Just a typical example here with the ISPMs, these are international standards for phytosanitary measures. Members would see that at some point you will be transporting even cement, but which is far, far away from agriculture. But then you use pallets. The pallet, which is that wooden structure on which you put cement, that pallet is regulated by this department, because with that pallet we may harbor a pest and get them unintentionally introduced. So we need to have a law that goes as far as that far-fetched example, or an example of something that you wouldn't ordinarily think it exists. Hence, I use the worst case scenario of a cement pallet, which sits on, if or any other material product, which sits on a wooden pallet that comes in. So I spoke of establishment of the NPPOZA, National Plant Protection Organization of South Africa. And this is basically, once that is in, it would, or is introduced or referred, provided for by the Act, we'll have those units or those expertise brought together to form a competent authority. Import control, this is of plants and plant products. This obviously I spoke to in the summary, that we prevent establishment or introduction of diseases and pests. Sometimes it's a disease, sometimes it's a pest, sometimes it's a disease and pest. So any of the two has got to be controlled. National control, this basically where we say anywhere in the country where agricultural production happens, we've got to be able to have a legal standing or to be provided for by law to regulate that part. And we've done it before, and we've been taken to court where we would have a disease of high economic importance happening. A classical case was in potatoes, and we directed for enabled by the pest, luckily because it was not an imported So it was within the country. We've had directed that for the potatoes, the whole production to be destroyed because we feared the introduction or the spread of that pest going to other areas where it does not naturally occur. Export control, like I said, the current Agricultural Pest Act does not make provision for export control. What is that? That doesn't make provision for us to say, you shall not export this to this country. In short, we do not have that provision in our current law. And we are asking that we should be able to do that. And once the only enabling factor or to see if we then have a provision of the law to control export of plant and plant products is our ability to issue certificate. We are already issuing it, a phytosanitary certificate, because like I said, we've got to ensure that we have had to make do with what we have and formulate our NPPOZA, even though it is not provided for by our law, and we have, because we couldn't export without the phytosanitary certificate that we are currently issuing. And re-exports also, this actually helps with economic growth. If one country requires products and we know we can access them, they can come to this country, be inspected, and be exported further to another country, basically. This happens in the main with seeds. It's easy for seeds because of the shelf life. It happens already in the nutritive business where seeds are imported into the country, they get checked, certified, and they can be exported to another country. Next slide. Thank you. This, I wouldn't waste much time. Basically, this is what we are saying. These are the definitions. Very important is for Section 3, the powers of the minister to make regulation and control measures for, you know, so that the act can, the how part of the act can be implemented, because there will be regulations that we need, because we wouldn't want to put basic administration or basic processes and procedures in the act. So you basically have the minister, the act, the section making provision for minister to promulgate regulations and as and when the needs arise, so that we're able to control. And also section 4, also the minister may prescribe measures which might have got to be complied with by anybody. And at this moment, this is the area that we need to emphasize. We should be able to as much as a production is enabled and can happen anywhere, in the event of a disease or a pest, minister should be empowered to be able to prescribe conditions under which such production can happen. And also, I spoke of us having had to eradicate or clear off or the infested potato farm at one point. But this gets challenges because some already know the weaknesses in our current law and we get challenged. Hence, we need to strengthen that, especially Section 4. Next slide. Section 5 is in the main coming from the old Act, but this is just amplified. This is makes provision for a registrar, executive officer or registrar. In this case, we call it the same, with the same functions as that of a registrar, that the minister designate a director within the department to become executive officer. This person implements the act on behalf of minister, and minister, of course, the powers conferred to by Section 5 are not divested, so the minister can still act upon them, but for day-to-day running, you then have the executive officer running or administering the act on behalf of the minister. This executive officer would be in the employ of the department. Section 6, and basically it's about the powers, what this person, executive officer, may or may not do, but in the main, it would be just making sure that any section or provision of this act gets carried out by the executive officer on behalf of the minister. But the key part that we want to emphasize here is for the executive officer to have powers, legal powers, to confiscate and control and destroy controlled goods. So if we hear of a truck with bananas from another country or already consignment, this section, if we are sure that there are, the one has not been inspected or that we suspect it may have pests and diseases, we want that to be able to have that authority enabled by the provision of this Act to confiscate and destroy if needs be. And Section 7, it is about the land which must be served in the prescribed manner, basically just to say what can happen where as far as production is concerned. So this might say Minister through regulations and through an order itself by of Section 7, we may prescribe, Minister may prescribe areas that are quarantine areas and movement from one area to the other may be restricted. All of this would be a processes of trying to prevent introduction or spread of diseases and pests. Next slide. Search and seizure, at the moment it happens, but it's not entrenched and it's not sufficiently entrenched in our law, and we want it to be clearly entrenched and it be provided for so that we can enter. And we can in terms of Section 9 of the current, but it's not the wording around it, as members would know. The wording of a section is what gives or takes a situation out of a situation, it's what matters if it's in any situation, a legal situation. So we then want to just make sure that the wording there clearly stipulates what the conditions under which the executive officer or an assignee of the executive officer can enter any premises, search and seize and or destroy. So as long as that is pursuant to pest or disease control. I spoke of the NPPOZA establishment by the sections 8, 9, 8 and 11, and then import regulation section 12, basically just in order to prevent again introduction of diseases. So we've got to put conditions. If somebody wants to import, we're doing it, but it's not sufficiently provided for in our law. We are doing all these, honorable members, because it's what it's guided by the World Trade Organization Sanitary and Phytosanitary Committees and requirements. So we still are finding it possible, but if challenged, we may not be able to have a leg to stand on. Next slide. Import of regulated products, this is clear enough, this is what you want to amplify and make it very clear, and we may be able to say this cannot be imported from any country. This is not tantamount to protection of growers, it's not an upfront state, but this will go as far as disease and pest control is concerned, not economics. And regulated articles, this is clear to ensure that we comply with other countries. So we owe it to other countries, hence the export part that the 1983 Act did not make provision for. We have, because we are operating within the realm of the WTO, World Trade Organization, IPPC, we've got to be able to assure or make assurances to countries importing products of plant origin or plant. We have got to give that assurance that the products that we export into them do not pose a phytosanitary danger to them or to that country. And in transit, that's Section 16, which is really straightforward, just to make sure that, as members would know, most of the landlocked SADC countries make import and export through our port of Durban. So there's a lot of in transit imports and exports, which if you think of the port of Durban full of during the citrus season, part of that, about 30% of that would be coming from other countries, that include Zimbabwe. So though other countries might have ports, it might just be far for them, and the port of Durban, if also mindful of where the destination is, port of Durban becomes one of those prepared. So for that reason and other reasons, we've got to make safely be able to have measures in place to control in transit export or import. Next slide. We will from time to time in terms of Section 17 declare regulated pest. This will not necessarily be quarantine pest, but would be pest of economic importance. So would from time to time ensure that we check the situation, the agricultural situation in the country, and as the needs arise, we want to be enabled by a provision of this act to be able to declare which pests are regulated pests. It means one of the things would be if the members ask, what do you mean regulated pests? So it becomes therefore law that upon the discovery of a specific act, you should be able to report, you should report, and so that we know. And also for states, because we know the damage that the pest might cause, we then need to act proactively and be able to come in and control the pest. Whether the farmer agrees for us to come and control the pest or not, if we know the pest can spread to other farmers, we need the surety in the law to be able to control it. This is the compulsory notification part, section 18 that I was referring to. The declaration of quarantine areas, this has spoken of, assignment of powers, this is the, this section 22, honorable members, is futuristic. It's planned for a situation where there might just be so much to be done that the state might not be able to cope with. And in that specific case, minister may, through in terms of section 22, assign certain powers to a body, organization, or touristic or natural person to be able to carry out the work of government. So this is just futuristic. We would prefer to keep it there because we don't want to be found unprepared in the unlikely event of us being unable to perform any function. We want that to have that comfort that minister may assign another authority. It could be another department, it could be a municipality, it could be a private company, it could be a juristic or natural person. Next slide. Section 28, very important. At the moment, I think it says, once the current act says, if we find a traveler with apples in their bag, we must then go to magistrates within the area of jurisdiction of where we find the person. The fine liable is around 300 rand, so that's not really deterred infringement. So we then are through section 28, we want to align with other countries and be able to have fines issues and because that is evidence enough, also jailing if needs be, transgressors could be jailed. But this is more about the fine that is deterrent enough for officials not to be tempted. I'm not sort of not officials, travelers, not to be tempted to bring this in the country. At the moment, we confiscate their products, we can only confiscate and destroy. We are not that much empowered. As members would know, the dogs, the canine units that we keep there, we before BMA, we used to run it, we used to have about 20 dogs, and each dog handler, each dog has its own handler, and they don't come cheap, so we are providing a very expensive service, but we get nothing out of it. So that's basically the unfortunate cycle that we're trying to correct, because each K9 unit costs easily around 11,000 rand, and an official who is a handler full time and up and down, let alone the medical and everything needs of the dog. But when we are found by that expensive dog with an apple, all we can do is take apple away from you. So that's not fair. This, we spoke of Section 30 regulations, the compensation by minister in the event we would have had to come and destroy the plantations, bananas, easy to do. In the event of virus, we can destroy that. Potatoes, there's few diseases. There's a possibility of a compensation if we are able to check to confirm that this infestation it's not as a result of any own doing by the owner. Those are the things, but this will, the how part would be clarified through in the form of regulations. This cooperation does basically to the executive officer designated by minister, by different authorities and parties in order to for the work of the executive officer to be easy through section 32. Next slide, we're almost done. So these are the consultations. Like I said, honourable members, this bill has traversed all the way through everything, ticking all boxes, but just couldn't be ascended into law owing to the changeover of the political cycle of government. Next slide. This was the consultation meeting. Next slide. We don't think we need any more money to run this act. Like I said in the beginning throughout the presentation, we have been able to make do with what we have, and we have been able to, in the main, implement
the
act without...
Can we conclude?
Yes, this is the next one, is the last one. Next slide. This is what we submit, honorable members, honorable chairperson. Thank you very much.
Honorable, you may proceed.
I was checking you on the platform.
Yes, I was speaking and I realized when you said chair that I was still muted. I thought I had unmuted. Please proceed.
Okay. No, thank you, Chair. Let me greet you, Chair, and my colleagues and the officials on the platform. Chair, this is a piece of legislation that is important when you listen to this presentation. And one would ask herself, why it took so long to come to this. Bearing in mind the importance that has been put before us on clauses that has to be amended and those that has to be brought in. Chair, I wouldn't have any qualms with this bill and the presentation and motivation that has been put before us. I'm just asking myself one thing about the control at the border, Chair. Apparently, South Africa, we don't have scanners. If we have, they might not be enough. But what is the department doing? Have they spoken to the department foreign affairs on matters, border control? Because in many cases, like that is Rahe is indicating, this is brought through tourism. You go to Botswana, you see a plant is beautiful, you come with it and you pass through the border. Or have they tried to interact with their counterparts that are responsible for border control management? I know that the minister responsible has been very vocal on issues of border management control. And this is another angle that is affecting us in this regard, and it will be proper for us to know if they have made contact or do they see the need to do that. To Chair, in as much as this will help, for sure it will ease the situation. I was just thinking loud here, sitting where I am, this might work, but just out of interest, in that, Sarah, what do you do in cases like the pests that fly into our country? I'm thinking about the 2018 scenario of fall armyworm, where it was first seen somewhere central, western Africa, and before we knew it, we were casualties this side. In that case, yeah, phytosanitary matters. How do you deal with such instances? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tape. The Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you and good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Sarahe, on your presentation. Chair, I don't have much, but I just want to just make sure with regards to the consulted stakeholders. Was that done through public hearing or was it done through just engagement regarding the bill? And if it was through public hearing, where is the advert of this particular engagement with the stakeholders? The bill obviously took 10 years, Chair. And my worry is that if I look at the timelines that were presented here to us, and specifically 2018 withdrawal of the bill in accordance with Rule 334, to allow the portfolio committee in order to conclude on business before it ahead of the national election. So this bill is presented to us a year before the national election. Again, it's in May month. So this bill will probably also be withdrawn as such. So I just want to understand, why is this the bill been really dragging so much, you know, before it comes before the portfolio committee? And further, Chair, they talk about the engagement with the department. And just for example, you know, this and that department. What about the just giving us a list of all departments that were consulted, small business, obviously, like Meshape has spoken about the Home Affairs, Customs. I mean, we've got porous borders, you know. So while the bill is necessary, you know, our borders are not really helping much, especially when it comes to borders of Botswana, let me just say, around the SADC area and so forth. What engagement has taken place to ensure that this bill is really enforced? Chair, the presentation talks about the, what you call the export control, no provision for export control, re-export and in transit. You did indicate that you did a socio-economic impact. When was it done? Assessment, it was 2020. Just a question, has that been presented to us? That's number one. Number two, what has been the cause to the country with regards to especially not having this particular provision on this particular bill? And Chair, I think this might have been presented, but it's too long ago. We definitely need to really see the socio-economic impact engagement that was done with us. If it was done with us, I can't remember being done, but I think it will be important that presentation is done. Thanks, Chair. I think I'm covered all the issues that I thought I will require some clarity. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tate Masipa. The Honorable Charter. Makaba. Amuchete. The Honorable Kapa. Dem. Paul Kapa. The Honorable Mamun Babama.
Good morning, Chair, and everybody on the platform. Chair, I am covered on this one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. The Honorable Tate Matias. Tate Matias. The Honorable Memato. Memato.
Hello.
Yes, please continue, Honorable Memato.
Chairperson, I would like to say thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, but presently I have nothing to comment on. I just heard that the presentation was straightforward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Memato. Akpare Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm covered by my colleague, Honorable Masipa. However, I think we also need to sit down and have discussions with the NCOP, because I don't think the NCOP will be able to take all the bills through this term. So we must just make sure that we don't waste our time. If the NCOP indicates that they won't be able to give full complement to this bill, then we must rather let it stand over for the next term. So my proposal is being in conversation with the NCOP, and then we can take it from there on. But I agree it's time for a bill such as this, and we need to protect our plans in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. The Honorable Ntate Muntwedi. The Honorable Muntwedi.
My Chair, my local network from my side, I'm okay, Chair Sharp.
Thank you, Ntate Muntwedi. Honorable members, is there any other honorable member on the platform who may wish to pose a question I have not recognized?
Chair, you might have recognized me when my gadget was still disappointing me, but I wanted
please go
to
go ahead, Honorable Kapa.
Thank you, Chair. First, I wanted to add on what Honorable Kapa had said, because I was also concerned about non-mention of the Water Management Agency. And also, thing that's going to get a clarity, maybe I missed this one, that what happens when the department just discovers that the pest is already spreading in the country without knowing when it came and how it came, and then how is that one being handled? And lastly, Chair, that's a minor one now. I noticed that on Section 9, when they were saying Section 9, 10, and 11, and I think mistakenly they said Section 9, 8, and 11. I think that's a correction there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. honorable members, I should have started in the meeting by acknowledging our new member to the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, the Honorable Ubaus to Mozamini from the ANC. Sibalkulu, you are most welcome to the Portfolio Committee, and I see you have your hand raised. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, our chairperson. And indeed, because I was noticing that the chair was identifying everyone, I had to indicate, but not to differ from what the other members have said. And I'm sure the chair would have accepted my apology on the previous meetings. I'm okay now, Chair. But on the discussion, I support what other members have said. I thank you very much, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Baudlamini. And you are most welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. Honorable members, any other honorable member on the platform who may wish to pose a question? If not, allow me to also pose a question or two. Honorable members, the bill was drafted when forestry was still part of this department. It fell under and was part of agriculture. As the bill refers to forestry, which is now with environment, won't there be challenges in implementation of the bill once signed into law, including conflicts with forestry and other legislation that is under environment? Secondly, honorable members, how has the department ensured that ordinary land users, particularly communal and developing farmers, were consulted and participated in the development of the bill? According to the memo, local consultation on the bill was limited to the National House of Traditional Leaders and national and provincial departments, some government entities and industry bodies. However, Section 18 of the bill makes it compulsory for land users or any person to report presence of regulated pests. Further, honorable members, Section 28 of the bill makes it a punishable offense if a person does not report the presence of regulated pests. Will there be training of land users and owners about regulated pests, including how to identify them and the reporting mechanism? In the case of communal land, honorable members, who will be held liable if a regulated pest has not been reported and end up spreading or infesting other areas? Does the department, honorable members, currently have enough capacity to carry out inspections on important consignments, including all arrivals on ports of entry, i.e. that being both land and air? How many inspectors and canine dogs are assigned to each port of entry in the country? How many hours do these work in a day? For example, there are cases where international flights land at OR Tambo International Airport at 5 a.m. in the morning, and I have not seen any of the canine dogs at both OR Tambo International Airport and Cape Town International Airport. That would be all on my side, honorable members. I see a hand of Ntate Masipa.
Chair, I just want to apologize maybe to the department. I understand that the bill was with us since 2021. It was not really the fault of the department, it was on our side. So I think the request for me really, Chair, on this one is that can we just have all bills that have been presented to us that we need to go through before the close of this term of parliament? Thanks, Chair.
Ntate Serage, you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, I'm just going to mute 1 minute.
We have lost that Serage, Chair.
I'm here, Honorable Chairperson. Sorry, thank you very much. Because we had challenges. As you members would have noticed, we were lost in one gadget. So we log in with two gadgets. So hence I then had to have, I'm sorry, apologies for the feedback. Honorable members, the questions, we captured them only at the time when Honorable Kruger was on the platform. That's when we lost the connection. On this platform, Honorable Members, Honorable Chairperson, I'm with the Dr. Julian Yapta, who's the Chief Director responsible for Plant Production and Health. We also have with us Mr. Jan Hendrik Fender, who's the Director responsible for Plant Health. So the parts of the question that I may not have covered with your indulgence, Chairperson, please allow them to also come. So I'm going to scan through those that I've been able to capture and allow Dr. Yapta and Mr. Fender to come in. The first question from Honorable Klappe with regards to the interaction with counterparts, yes, it has happened and it can never be enough. Honorable members are aware that from the 1st of April, the borders, the control of the all ports of entry now is the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs with the agency called Border Management Authority. We work with them and we are about to conclude on the implementation protocol to ensure that they are there and to ensure that they cover all the ports of entry. We monitor them. They still administer our law. So we definitely will have to ensure that they have sufficient capacity and resources. We've had, as part of preparing them to go, we basically also ceded 272 officials that we used to have from the department. Those officials have been ceded to the Border Management Authority, so they will be forming part. So the Border Management Authority is not starting from a low base or a zero base. They start with officials that we already had, and they are familiar with the work. The sanitary requirements at the ports of entry. These are not enough, obviously. We will have to engage with them, and them being an agency and them being able to generate a revenue, we think they will be able to have sufficient capacity where we were not as the department. Honorable Klappe also mentioned asked a question about what happens to pests that would fly. Yes. It's a very a good observation, Honorable Klappe. As a matter of fact, we see the same problem with the locusts that fly over into other countries, neighboring countries. And as we always say, the two things that don't know borders, pests and fire. So there are engagements at the moment. Just around March, we were in Namibia. One of the things that we put forward was to have that collaboration, starting with Namibia and other countries that we share borders with, so that they would be able to detect pests before. If pests are detected towards the border, they will let us know so we can be ready, and we also will pledge to do the same. So it's a tricky one at the moment because pests just, if they don't travel with us, tourists, they fly over. And it's true indeed, they do fly, as you have noticed with the current control of locusts to be busy with it, of the Quillia base. So if this is the correct observation that we at the moment are able to talk, the if we are able to control, they do not necessarily come in, but we have the other countries ready. Honorable Masipa mentioned or asked a question with regard to how the participation happens. And we have consulted other departments. We may not necessarily have reached all other farmers, because this affects farmers. But at some point, and also Dr. Yafta and Mr. Fender will come in just to get with a specific as to where we've been able to go. But we were reliant, because once the bill is with the PC, we stand ready to go and wherever the PC would want us to go. But I think the question is asking whether the previous PC has had time to take this to public participation. And my colleagues will get to the specifics as studying with Dr. Yafta immediately when I'm done, with your indulgence, Chairperson. Ms. Honorable Masipa came again to, I had Richard return there that 2021, not 2020. So if Honorable Masipa, yes, this bill has been before this current August committee, and your last question, Honorable Masipa, on all the bills that are before, we will certainly make this committee aware of the bills that we would really plead that something is done, so that we don't have three political cycles going through one bill. And as members who have already noticed, this is one of those very important bills that has got to be passed, because we are found wanting, and those that don't want to comply with the law, they know the weaknesses in our current act and can easily take us on. The CS is a recent one. It will be shared with the PC. And the economic impact the CS does grant us, and they've done the analysis, so that the CS does grant us to go ahead and with the bill. We may not have done the economic assessment in terms of the figures of loss. Something that we will check if it can be done. We will rely, and since this we'll be talking as of this void has been in existence since 1994. It's just a lot of money that we may not be able to compute sufficiently at this stage. And Honorable Kruger, just the time when you were talking, I missed that, with your indulgence. I hope if Mr. Fender, because Mr. Dr. Yafta and I are in the same building, so we're locked off at the same time. I hope Mr. Fender was still on, so he captured Mr. Kruger's question, Honorable Kruger's question. If not, we'll, with your indulgence, plead that we get it again. And Honorable Kappa, the Department of Home Affairs is now in charge of the ports of entry. And we're going to be signing with them an implementation protocol. In that protocol, we're going to, in inverted commas, dictate, but basically we'll direct the infrastructure that they have. This comes with the question by Honorable Clappe about us having the resources that are required to perform quarantine services function. You are right, Honorable Clappe, we do not have sufficient, and the observation is true. So yes, Honorable Kappa, we will have to ensure that the Border Management Authority is resourced. This is one of the reasons why some of the functions were ceded in terms of Section 97 by the President to go to Border Management Authority, just so that they can consolidate and work together. Because at the moment, at the port, you have officials from agriculture, from health, from environment, so they're all over the place. So when they'll be in the control of the same department or the same authority, we think they'll be able to share resources. And so, yes, the issue of the scanners, in fact, we do not have, for a country like ours, Honorable Kappa, Honorable Klappe, country like ours, which with a lot of land borders, has got to have what we call disinfecting sprays for vehicles. Most of us know that others go to Mozambique to go hunting, or fishing, they go on to farms, they farm in different, some are farming in Botswana, in Namibia, they come. So it's easy for them to introduce a pest of quarantine importance or pest of economic importance. So yes, we've got to have the borders resource so that all vehicles coming in can be, other than just complying, the vehicles themselves will have to be disinfected. That's one of the requirements that we made to the Border Management Authority. What happens when a pest directly, yes, the same thing. If it happens that a pest is introduced, unfortunately with the current situation, we may not be able to know, but we will, as soon as we finalize our implementation protocol with the Border Management Authority, we should be able to then have all ports of entry, air, land, and all other sea ports sufficiently capacitated and sufficiently resourced for them to be able to take care of unintended introduction of pests. The Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Mandela, the bill, yes, we left it as is, and it's one of the methods that we'll have to correct. It still refers to forestry, and one of the things that we will immediately attend to is to ensure that all references to forestry are removed, and so that it refers to agricultural land reform and rural development. How were ordinary members consulted? I can honestly sense here and say not sufficiently, but the bill is text 76, so one assumes you would then be able to have that opportunity. We may have consulted farmer organizations, but we may not have had sufficient sessions with the farmers, actual farmers that may not be aware. And as Honorable Chair has correctly pointed out, it places the responsibility on all farmers. So it's only fair that we go to them and make them aware of their responsibility in terms of the provisions of this bill once enacted. Who will be liable if it's a case of communal land? Yes, the intention and the hope is that you don't get to that, because a pest of quarantine importance or quarantine pest should not even be detected. And if anything, if our ports and our quarantine services work as per design at the port, we shouldn't have any quarantine pest introduced. That way, then pest of economic importance, the question with Honorable Mandela is about our ability as the department to be able to assess and be able to detect pests before they get uncontrollable. Yes, the question is, do we have sufficient capacity? We do, and nothing can ever be 100% sufficient. At the moment, we do what we call surveillance. We put traps at ports of entry at strategic areas throughout the country so that we are able to detect the presence of pests. The good thing with pests is that they do not become problematic at all their stages, this all stages of their life. So if we're able to pick up pests early enough, we're able to control them before they become destructive. So we have traps that we set around with different countries, different parts of the country, different provinces, different cities, taxi ranks, bus ranks. We just have to be sure that we increase that surveillance. We rely on surveillance up to this so far, Honorable Mandela, to be able to detect and know areas that we need to intensify control. Resources can never be enough, but so far, yes, we are able to do and control. And thank you very much, Dr. Yapta. If you may, with your indulgence, Chairperson, the part that I may not have sufficiently covered, and Mr. Fender will also, with indulgence of Chairperson, to cover areas that I might have missed. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Sarafa, and good morning to the honorable members on the platform. There are just two areas that I would like to cover. Just to add to what Mr. Sarafa said in terms of the question from Honorable Tlape as to the pests that do fly around, that enters the country. Mr. Sarafa did mention that we do collaborate with other authorities, but in our country, we also have the Emergency Plant Pest Response Plan, which is a very detailed and consulted plan that we have developed with all of the stakeholders, which details all of the relevant actions that we may and have to undertake as and when we have an emergency pest breakout, which obviously, as in the case for when a pest do fly into the country and it is a pest of quarantine concern, that we can invoke this plan. And then also we do also, as part of our interaction with other authorities, we have examples of projects that we are currently managing with some of our neighbors with international involvement to deal with pests of common concern amongst these countries. The question from Honorable Masipa with regards to public hearings, the previous portfolio committee did not undertake any public hearings, despite it having reached the portfolio committee back then. We never had an opportunity like we have now to make a first presentation. However, in developing the bill, we undertook a national workshop to consult and to solicit inputs. And then there was also a formal publication in the Government Gazette through which we've also solicited inputs. And those inputs have also been summarized and was part of our socioeconomic impact assessment report. But the department can again make it formally a summary of the comments and how we've responded to those comments. We can make again available to the committee. Then, unfortunately, Chairperson, the only input that I heard from Honourable Krier was that the committee needs to consult with the NCOP to determine whether all the bills that still need to go to the NCOP will also be able, that NCOP will be able to deal with it. But if there was a specific question that we've missed, if Mr. Venter that did not capture Chair, I think we would appreciate if that question could be repeated. Those are the only items that I would like to reply to. Thank you so much.
With your indulgence, Chairperson, Mr. Fender, have you picked anything that we missed?
Thank you, Mr. Sarachi. Honourable members, I may have only one aspect I want to just make clear and for clarifying, that is indeed, as Mr. Sarachi indicated, that there's the bill still refers to forestry, but we must also remember that forest plants or trees are plants. Therefore, the importation of forestry seeds and seedlings, as well as the control of pests, forestry, which still is covered by this bill. But yes, in terms of departmental alliance, then we may have to make an amendment if that is not clear. So I just want to catch that. And then maybe just one other thing that I forgot now, and that was the question on communal land or who is responsible. The bill focuses on land users, and throughout that's the same in the current Act, Agricultural Pest Act, and those consultations and training or awareness actions there's a unit in the in our department who is dealing with these type of alerts and awareness to train growers from subsistence up to commercial growers on how to identify or detect these pests. And you would recall the introduction of full armyworm in South Africa. South Africa is one of the countries in the world currently being recognized for our quick actions through our emergency response team and the quick our ability to very quickly set up a steering committee dealing with this space specifically and get to the public on awareness on how to identify the space and how to treat your land, your maize, which was mainly attacked with it. Of course, there was still some damage, and one can never avoid that. But our structure was of such that it already helped us tremendously in a quick response. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chairperson, we submit. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Serage. I see the hand of Honorable Kruger is up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make a proposal that, NCOP are very serious about not going through all the bills that's all of a sudden coming to NCOP. So I want to propose that we invite the NCOP to come and make a presentation and see if all these bills are, you know, if they have time to work through all these bills that we want to send through to the NCOP. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Dr. Krug and Dr. Masipa.
Chair, I think I'm answered on the question of the public participation, but I'm still not very clear, Chair, as to when this public participation took place. And I'll assume that it might have taken place during the fifth term or the previous term, if I'm correct. My concern is that that particular public participation was done under the different, obviously, the Department of Agriculture combined with Forestry and Fisheries at the time. I do not know what is the procedure, but I'll definitely think that the department will still probably be required to gazette this bill before we can obviously, you know, go through it and get some inputs from the public, because I think when it was gazetted at the time, it was gazetted obviously as forestry, agriculture, forestry and fisheries at the time. So I will be guided by you, but I will still think that we might be short-circuiting the process, or we might also have to seek legal advice. I'm also aware of the input that Honorable Kruger is making right now, which I think we obviously do get our HEC, but I think we definitely need to, as a committee, we need to talk about the bills that are at hand and see how best we can work with them, because I don't think we have got much time. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ntate Masipa. Honorable members, one of the identified constraints was the budget and inadequate resources. At the time of the CIS in 2013, the total cost for the bill were estimated at about 5 million, at about 50 million rand per annum, and 30 million rand of the total was for quarantine, pest surveillance, implementation and enforcement. I therefore want to understand that, does the department think the total amount will be sufficient in light of the biosecurity challenges that we have as a country? Most concerning is the fact that the biosecurity sub-program, which covers both plants and animals, will only get an average of about 4.5 million per annum over the medium term. So how does the department plan to implement the bill without resources? If we can have responses to those questions so we can move on to the next presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, you are right, Honorable Chair. We do not have funds are never enough. we budgeted for this, but it's never enough, and the industry comes on to assist also for the entire biosecurity work. We require biosecurity, as members know, covers the animals and plants and their diseases. So we budgeted for it, but it may not be enough, and we hope when the structuring process, fit for purpose process of the department, that we will be allocated sufficient resources. There are engagements with Treasury. We hope for that. But at the moment, on a project, no, we do not necessarily have enough, but we have made strides to allocate what we have just so we can have this very important bill passed so that we can then be able to see what we can do. The bill also makes provision for assigning of resources.
Honorable Baul Dlamini, please mute your microphone. Honorable Baul Dlamini, please mute your microphone. You may proceed, Dr. Serase.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, funds, like in short, we can never have enough, but we the budget that we've made available, we think we can, once the bill is passed, extended into law, we can manage reasonably well, but we will require more resources. And this bill makes provision for assignments, minister may assign. That is just a cushion for in the event we need to get extra assistance, but unfortunately that comes at extra cost, and we've seen industry basically repelling any such moves of appointing assignees. But yes, in short, so far we are fairly well, doing well. We've commissioned a study for the cost of the lack of or insufficient biosecurity in the whole country. We may share with that, we're working with the Western Cape Department of Agriculture. Once that's done, we may share with, that's going to conduct an analysis of the entire country threats, biosecurity threats. So we'll see, that report will give us an idea of which areas require additional funding. Thank you. And the others from Honorable Prier and Honorable Masipa, those are basically for, I think, for procedural and purposes. We are willing, we're ready. If this August committee wants us to go on a public participation or consultation, we are ready. All we are pleading is for the bill to go through within, still possible, if possible, this political cycle, because we've waited for long, and our clients are already aware of the loopholes in our current law. We submit your question. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. That is the presentation and responses from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. We will now move on to the second presentation, honorable members, on our agenda, so that we may be able to finish on time. I am looking at the time as we progress, and would like us to set aside the presentation and the responses that we've received for the Plant Health Phytosanitary Bill, and we will now move on to the Deeds Registries Amendment Bill. Can I invite honorable members, the officials of the department, to put up the presentation on the Deeds Registries Amendment Bill, and they may proceed.
Chair, point of order.
Yes, Ntate Masipa.
I think I made an input with regards to the gazetting of this bill or the public participation. And Serage answered back to say that it's up to us. I thought Chair will probably just summarize and make a ruling in this regard.
Thank you. We'll revert back to you. Let us proceed that Serage and the officials of the department on the presentation, as I will have closing remarks at the end of the meeting.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Committee. My name is Antoinette Reynolds. I'm from the Office of the Chief Register of Deeds, and I will present the Deeds Registries Amendment Bill. The objectives of the bill is to amend the Deeds Registries Amendment Act, the Deeds Registries Act, my apologies, that's Act 47 of 1937, and that is to streamline certain administrative provisions and to provide for the recorder of land tenure rights by a registrar of deeds in the Deeds Registries, and to further regulate the powers of the minister and that of the Deeds Registries Regulation Board, and to also amend the composition of the board, and to extend the applications of waivers of preferences of real rights over land, and to introduce further punitive measures regarding deviant conduct in these registries. Now, Clause 1 of the bill seeks to amend Section 2 of the Deeds Registries Act, and Section 2 deals with the appointment of the Chief Registrar of Deeds, the appointment of registrars and assistant and deputy registrars of deeds. Now, these appointments are affected in terms of the Public Service Act. However, it is not clear from the Act. The impression is there that these appointments are affected in terms of the Deeds Registries Act. So this Section 2 will now be amended to make it clear that the appointment of these officials are indeed affected under the Public Service Act of 1994. And also it will make it clear that these officials do have to have the qualifications as is recognized by the Minister of the Department of Public Service and Administration. Clause 2 also provides for the insertion of a new Section 2 capital A, 2 capital B and 2 capital C. And that is necessary because the Act does not fully address the role that the Chief Registrar of Deeds is playing in the branch deeds registration. So Section 2 will now be inserted to deal with the appointment of the Chief Registrar of Deeds. Those Section 2.1, those will be removed and it will be now inserted in the new 2A. And 2B will be inserted to deal with the responsibilities of the Chief Registrar of Deeds. That is, for instance, to head the management of the deeds registration, legislation, litigation and deeds training services, as well as the deeds registration ICT services, amongst others. And 2C will be inserted to deal with the duties of the Chief Registrar of Deeds. That is, for instance, that the CRD act as chairperson and executive officer of the Deeds Registries Regulation Board and of the Sectional Titles Regulation Board. The Chief Registrar of Deeds must, for instance, also develop and maintain the electronic deeds registration system, which is now as contemplated in the Electronic Deeds Registration Systems Act, Act 19 of 2019. Now, Clause 3 of the bill aims to amend Section 3 of the Deeds Registries Act, and Section 3 speaks to the duties of the Registrar of Deeds. Now, the Act does not currently provide for the recorder of land tenure rights in a deeds office. It provides for the registration of land and real rights in land. So there's a need now to insert a provision in Section 3 that provide mechanisms for the recorder of land tenure rights that have been created and lawfully issued under other law. And there's also a need to insert a Section 3.1c ter to provide for the noting of the conversion to full ownership of such rights in compliance with the requirements of law. So they need to be enabling law. If you, for instance, think of the Upgrading of Land Tenure Rights Act, Act 112 2019, it provides for, in Section 2, for the creation of certain land tenure rights, and specifically in Section 2.2 of that Act, it provides for the Registrar of Deeds to note a title deed and to note its records with regard to the upgrading of those rights into full ownership. For instance, to do so without the lodgements of transfer duty certificates, etc. So in this case, it will be exactly the same. The Register of Deeds will be in a position to record land tenure rights once there is other legislation that places such a duty on the registrar and provides then, of course, for the creation and the recording of those rights and the enabling legislation. Clause 3B also deals with the amendment of Section 3(1)(i) of the Act. Now, Section 3(1)(i) of the Act provides for a registrar of deeds to register waivers of preferences in respect of registered real rights in land over mortgage bond. However, there's also now a need to provide for the registration of waivers of preferences in respect of registered real rights in favor of leases. Now, this amendment in Section 3(1)(i) will address this need. Now, as an example, I can mention, for instance, where I inherit a farm from my father, and in my father's a testament in the will, he, for instance, left a usufruct over the farm in favor of my mother. Now, that usufruct will be then registered as a real right over the title deed of the farm to protect her right. And then when I, for instance, want to go and obtain a mortgage bond, let's say I want to mortgage a 5 million rand over a bond over the farm, then APSA can ask that my mother waives preference of her registered real right of that usufruct in favor of the mortgage bond. And that bond will then be registered free from that usufruct. Now, here is now a proposed amendment for the same, the waiver of that usufruct, for instance, in favor of a lease, where I want to register a long-term lease, let's say of 10 years over the farm, then the lessee and my mother can agree. It's a voluntarily agreement that my mother then waives preference of her real right in favor of the lease, and the lease is then registered free from that usufruct. So a waiver of preference is a voluntary agreement whereby one holder basically exchanges the preference. He does not lose it. He just exchanges the preference that he enjoys over property in favor of another holder. Then clause 5 of the bill deals with the amendment of section 9. And section 9 deals with the establishment of the Deeds Registries Regulation Board. So it has become necessary now seeing that the Deeds Registries branch operates on a business account. We, for instance, charge office fees for the issuing of deeds registration information, and we also charge fee for a registration of deeds and documents. Now, with regard to that, and also in view of the development, we're currently busy with the development of the electronic deeds registration system as per the Electronic Deeds Registries Electronic Deeds Registration Systems Act, Act 19 of 2019. We are engaged with the development of that system. Now, in view of that, it has become necessary to have members on the board that are expert on financial matters and also expert in respect of ICT matters. So the Act is now to be amended to provide for membership of a chief financial officer in the office of the Chief Register of Deeds, as well as a chief financial officer at National Treasury, and then the chief director at ICT at the office of the Chief Registrar of Deeds, just to bring that expert knowledge onto the board. In clause 6 of the deal, bill deals with the amendment of section 10 of the Deeds Registries Act. Now, section 10 contains a list of matters in respect of which the minister may make regulations. Now, the proposal for the amendment is to provide for regulations to be made with regard to the collection of information pertaining to personal information relating to race, gender, citizenship, and nationality of landowners in South Africa. Now, this information will be captured into registers by deeds office data capturers, and this information will only be available to state departments of a national or provincial sphere of government. It will not be available to the general public. And this information will also then assist us in compiling more accurate land audit reports in future regarding the transformation of land ownership in South Africa. Then clause 10 of the bill deals with the amendment of section 99 of the Act. Now, section 99 deals with the exemption from the liability for acts and of omission in deeds offices. So the Act as it currently reads, it does provide for a registrar of deeds and official in the deeds office to be found guilty of an act or an omission, and that they are then liable to make good any loss to the government in instances where such acts or omission was mali fide. So the proposed amendment to section 99 now seeks to provide for a penalty of a fine or imprisonment in respect of these mali fide acts and omission by a registrar or an official in the deeds office, and also for other people, for other persons, for instance, your conveyances and your notaries that may be part of a collusion to such mali fide acts and omissions. And this is basically just to curb, to prevent fraudulent transactions from getting registered in these registries. Clause 12 of the bill, that deals with the amendment of the definitions in the Deeds Registries Act, which is found in section 102 of the Act. And this amendment provides for, it inserts a definition of attorney, and it also provides for the amendment of the definition of a conveyancer and the definition of notary public. Insofar, it will then enable notaries and conveyancers and attorneys that are in the employee of the department to prepare and execute deeds and documents in respect of transactions relating to state land. Then the last clause is clause 13. Now, clause 13 provides for the amendment of the Electronic Deed Registration Systems Act, that is Act 19 of 2019, to the extent as it's set out to a schedule to the bill. Now, this EDRS Act, as I mentioned, it provides for the preparation and the lodgement, registration and execution of deeds to be affected electronically. But due to the Act now, Section 3, the duties of the registrars of deeds to be amended to enable a registrar of deeds to attend to the recordal of land tenure rights, it is now also necessary to amend the EDRS Act also to provide for the electronic recorder of those transactions in the deeds office. And it is therefore necessary that this Act be amended then to provide for electronic recordals in a deeds registry. That's the last slide. I can just mention that the bill was tagged as a 75 bill. The department did receive...
Honourable members, please mute your microphones.
Thank you, Chair. The department did also receive exemption from the application of a socioeconomic impact assessment study, and that is due to the technical nature of the bill, and also that it doesn't introduce any new policy position. Yes, that's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mamu Antoinette Reynolds. Honorable members, there's the presentation on the Deeds Registries and Amendment Bill. We'll now open the session for questions of clarity and comments. Honorable Kabe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks the department for this presentation on this bill. Chair, I think we should welcome this because as the presentation is saying, the proposed amendments are intended to bring the Principal Act in line with formal requirements and transformatory land reform measures. However, Chair, I just want to check on the issue of financial implication because the memorandum indicates there's no financial implication on this one. So I'm sitting and thinking of the cost of developing and implementing the new systems and how are they going to be covered. And I think the department should be able to say to us, how are they going to consider the issue of social economic impact assessment and quality assurance of this bill, which then provides for details on the benefits and cost implications. Clause 3 also of this bill proposes an amendment of Section 3 of the Act by extending the duties of the registrar to record the land tenure rights that have been recognized or in future will be recognized by law. But while this principle is a good provision, it has a potential of providing security of land tenure for people that do not have. The concern here is that there's no legislation that provide mechanisms and procedures for the registration and recordal of rights in land, including but not limited to customary, informal and communal forms that are to be recorded by the Register of Deeds. Now, considering this limited capacity within the department to process legislation, it may take many years before this provision becomes applicable. So can we check with the department whether it's not advisable to pass legislation that determines how land tenure rights are established before including this provision in the bill? Because given the complexity of unregistered rights as well as existing conflicts around ownership and access to land, as the committee has seen in Gwaju, the recordal of rights without a clear communal land tenure policy might expose these registries to endless litigation and conflict management. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tape. Can we remove the presentation of the screen so we can enable to see the members as they raise their hands? Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there's few concerns that were raised by the law society and other that made submission, other institution that made submission to the department in terms of the bill as they see it. And one of the concerns that was raised was that the removal of the power of the Deeds Registry Regulation Board to make any actual regulations. So I just want to know if those submissions were considered and obviously taken into account, and if there has been changes that were made. And I will read the concern that was really raised by the Law Society. That concerns are that politicians are going to take charge of day-to-day technical management of highly technical business on recording who owns what. So this is one of the major submissions that was made. And there's also on clause 3, amending section 3 of the Principal Act, where it states that clause 3 of the bill proposes an amendment of section 3 of the Deeds Registry Act by extending the duties of the registrar, one of which is to record land tenure rights. While we have no problem with this principle, with the principle of this, we believe that before this duty is passed on to the registrar, legislation should be passed as to how land tenure rights, which now have to be recorded by the Registrar of Deeds are to be established. There are currently various forms of land tenure rights, some of which are probably capable of easy determination and recordal, and some of which would probably be very difficult to establish and record. It is of concern that the Registrar of Deeds could be bogged down dealing with dubious or unclear rights or become involved in litigation in respect of matters which are somewhat vague. So these are some of the concerns that were raised, but there are a number of them. I just want to hear from the department if all the submissions were taken into account and what was the determination. Has there been any amendment or change in terms of the drafting of those amendments that they were busy with after the Law Society and others have made their submission? Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Masipa, the Honorable Thapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also join in welcoming and appreciating the presentation of this amendment. Just a small clarity also, Chair, that just to find out if are there no pieces of legislation that had existed under the TBVC stage that may not have been repealed, that may be affecting this process of amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Thapa. The Honorable Tate Matias. Tate Matias. The Honorable Mamun Babama.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department for this presentation. Chair, I don't want to repeat some of the questions that my colleagues have asked. So I will just go to a few that are left after they have done their inputs. The first one, Chair, has the department adequately explored the corresponding implications of the recordal of land rights? I was just reading an article by Professor Ben Cousins based on reputable research that estimated that in 2011, some 1.5 million people lived in RDP houses with inaccurate or outdated title deeds, mostly due to transfers not recorded in the deeds office. And then another 5 million lived in RDP houses where no titles had been issued due to systemic inefficiencies. Now, along with 1.9 million people living in backyard shacks, 2 million on living on farms belonging to others, and 17 million in communal areas, giving us a total of about plus minus 30 million people, which is nearly 60% of the population. Now, all of these people will need to be serviced by this amendment that we are making in clause three. And I'm wondering if this amendment can realistically secure the land rights of all these people. I feel that it will really be a lot of work for the deeds office, and I'm wondering if we are ready for that. And also, Chair, has the department adequately explored the corresponding implications of the recordal of land rights in, for instance, the interplay and interdependence of various pieces of legislation between other government departments and their entities? Also, has the department explored the practicability of recording these rights, especially where surveying of the land is concerned? Does the existing deeds office have the capacity to implement recording of the rights, and how is this envisaged to be done? I also ask, have the traditional authorities who at present have custody of the informal land been adequately consulted on this amendment? And then I also ask What is the justification for removing the power of making regulations from the board to the minister? Thank you very much, Chair. That's all from me.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. The Honorable Memaso. Memaso.
Honorable Chair. Hello.
Yes, Mama, you can go ahead.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity and thank you, Chair, our ministers, present deputy ministers, my colleagues, our officials of the department. Let me also welcome the presentation as presented. Chair, without waste of time, I would like to align myself with the input made by Honorable Tape, of which I'm not going to repeat what she said. I think she covered me in most of what I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I was also covered by my two colleagues. Thank you, Chair.
Akbar Ebriet.
Thank you, Voorzitter. Chairperson, I am also covered. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ntate Muntwedi.
Eh, Modula Stilos, Madume Kwena, Lebatana Kopanomboti. Thank you. Just a quick one on my side. I may be wrong by this observation, but I have a feeling that the bill is taking powers of making regulations from the board to the minister. I just want to find out why is that the case. I think my colleagues have covered the issues of the recordal of rights, Chair. But on my side, which I also agree that is a big problem, not a bit, it's very problematic. I just want to check if does this include communal areas in the former Bantustan, Chair. And then maybe the other thing that one may just throw in there, Chair, is that what is the guiding registration on how the process to record the rights will be followed in terms of who then qualifies? And these are not matters, Chair, that can be left to be dealt in the regulations, Chair. Now, the last thing, Chair, on my side is that where there are disputes, how will the deed resolve this? And then who will facilitate the recording of rights in terms of conveyancers or officials in the department, Chair?
I'm much more in a stronger network now. Yeah, and we can hear you much better now. Thank you, Dr. Muntwedi. Honorable members, any other honorable member on the platform? Baustumo. Sibalko.
Chairperson, I am covered by the members who starting with the with what Club was saying, I am fully covered. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lamini. Any other honorable member who have not recognized who may wish to pose a question? Thank you, honorable members. I'm gonna take the opportunity to pose a series of questions that I have on my side. As I have listed a few questions which may go as follows. They can be categorized under four themes, namely one being procedural questions in relation to tagging. Secondly, it will be a registration of power of attorneys. Thirdly, the composition of the deeds registries, regulations board. And fourth, and lastly, the recorder of land tenure rights. In terms of tagging of the legislation, given the question of recordal of land tenure rights that have been allocated by government or by any competent authority. Does this include land rights allocated under indigenous or customary law by traditional authorities, amakhosi, or leaders in rural communities? We also know, honorable members, that Section 76 bill is any bill whose provisions is substantial measure fall within a functional area listed in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. If you look at the areas listed included, amongst others, indigenous law and customary law, as well as traditional leadership, what lessons can we draw from the Tohwane matter or the Clara judgment, especially on the questions of substance and purpose and effect? Since there is no other legislation, at least in my knowledge, honorable members, dealing with the issue of clarification or adjudication of rights unregistered and informal land rights, does this bill not imply that these issues will be dealt with under this bill? In short, do you consider the Deeds Registries Amendment Bill as an ordinary bill that does not affect the provinces? In regards with power of attorneys, honorable members, clause 3C and U of the bill provides for changes in the registration of powers of attorneys. What is the rationale behind this provision? What is the department trying to address or correct with the proposed amendment? I raise this issue because sometimes we find ourselves legislating for internal inefficiencies of the department or opposed to legislative gaps or weaknesses. In regards to the Deeds Registries Regulation Boards, honorable members, the bill takes away the powers of the Deeds Registries Regulation Board to make regulations. It gives the powers to the minister, who acts on recommendations of the board. What are the challenges with the current provisions where the board could make regulations? In what ways is this change going to improve the deeds registry system? The number of members appointed by the minister increases from 4 to 7. What are the reasons for this increase? Were there any challenges experienced? The bill also does not include the Chief Surveyor General in the names of the 7 members of the board. Why is that? We know that the South African deed system is underpinned by cadastre, a key function of surveyors. In my view, this is particularly important because of a proposal to introduce a recordal system, especially recordal of unregistered informal rights. Last but not least, honorable members, is that of recordal of tenure rights. Can anyone in Mvezo, where I'm from, approach the deeds registries to apply for recordal of rights under the term of this legislation? In some cases, unregistered rights in traditional communities are not individualized. These rights sometimes are vested at the level of family and enjoyed by all members of the family. In other cases, tenure rights are communally held, for example, grazing rights on communal land. How are these rights going to be recorded? In other words, what policy or legislation guides us in this process? We know that in some cases, unregistered land rights are not surveyed and there is no mapping. In some cases, it leads to land disputes about who owns what rights on what piece of land is clarified. Whilst recordal of rights is a noble initiative, there are fundamental questions about clarification and confirming the rights, as well as mechanisms to deal with the disputes. Can the department inform us as the portfolio committee which legislation deals with these matters? I note that the bill empowers the minister on the basis of recommendations of the Deeds Registries Regulation Board to make regulation with regard to the forms of applications, certificates, registers, and other documents to use in connection with the recordal of land tenure rights. This is problematic, honorable members, because as I said, there is no legislation, no policy to guide this complex system of clarifying unregistered tenure rights. Firstly, who can apply for recordal of rights? What are the requirements? I'd like to request, honorable members, that the department explain the provisions in clause 3.1, in clause 3, which I am interested to understand the following. Do land tenure rights lawfully issued by any competent authority include tenure rights issued by traditional authorities in terms of customary law or indigenous law? As I said before, should we not pass the Communal Land Tenure Rights Bill or Communal Land Tenure Policy before we pass this amendment or recordal of rights? Does the registration of the conversion of land tenure rights to another form include conversion from customary tenure rights to leases as seen under the Ingonyama Trust Board? If it does, is the amendment not legalizing what the court has already ruled unlawful? Similarly, honorable members, does the registration of conversion of land tenure rights to another form of tenure rights include issuing of title deeds to residents on communally owned land under traditional councils and traditional authorities? That would be all on my side. Thank you, honorable members. We will now hand over to Mayor Reynolds to take us through the responses.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. To answer the question of Honourable Member Tape with regard to the financial implications, the object memo states that there is no financial implications. And member then wanted to know what about the development of the electronic deed registration system. Now, I can just mention when we did go through the parliamentary processes with regard to the Electronic Deeds Registration Systems Act, that's Act 19 of 2019, and Section 2 of that Act has been enacted, it has been promulgated, and Section 2 of the EDRS Act provides for the Chief Registrar of Deeds to develop and to maintain the Electronic Deeds Registration System. Now, whilst we were busy with that act, we did do a socio-economic impact assessment study. So that was done. But I must just mention that the deeds registries function on a deeds trading account. So we create our own fees with regard to the registration of deeds and also the supply of deeds registration information. So the board, the Deeds Registries Regulation Board, sits annually, and they also come with, they discuss Section 84 of the regulations to the Act, which contains the schedule of fees. And it is increased every year, and it also goes to National Treasury for approval. And also monies from this trading account is being used to develop the EDRS, and there is sufficient funds for the development, and national treasury also allows the department to keep behind a certain amount of monies to pay towards the development of the EDRS system. The Chief Registrar of Deeds herself is also in the meeting, so if she wants to elaborate maybe later on with regard to financial implications that it may have. But I can just mention that the branch is paying, a branch deeds registration is paying itself towards the development of this system. But this was, of course, done and discussed with the promulgation of the Electronic Deeds Registration Systems Act. And it was also dealt with in the socioeconomic impact assessment study that was done with regard to that bill. So the only matter that's now being that relates to the EDRS Act and this current Deeds Registries Amendment Bill is just to amend the provisions of that bill to also allow for electronic recordal of land tenure rights. Then there was also, and by many honourable members, questions with regard to the recordal of land tenure rights, and that there is no enabling legislation in place. That is correct. There's no enabling legislation in place, and there, such legislation is needed to address the creation of these rights, the identification of these rights. Then this enabling legislation needs to address dispute resolution mechanisms. These are all things that cannot be addressed by the Registrar of Deeds. Registrar of Deeds attend to the registration and the recordal, but all those identification, the issuing of that right, as the chairperson also said, we're now amending Section 3 to provide for the recordal of land tenure rights that has been lawfully issued by government or a competent authority. And during public consultations also, the question was asked, but who is the competent authority? And that was a question that we could not answer, because all those matters will have to be addressed in an enabling legislation. I might just mention now, if you look at the short title of the bill, I just want to page there myself. The short title of the bill deals with the coming into operation of the provisions of the Act, and it provides specifically for these sections, sections 3A, that extend the duties of the Register of Deeds to attend to the recordal of the rights, all those sections that deal with the recordal, the making of regulations by the board, or the making of the regulations by the minister with regard to the forms that must be followed with regard to the recordals, all those provisions we are providing in the short title of the bill, which is clause 14, for those clauses to come into operation at a later stage. Those will come into operation on a date to be determined by the president by proclamation in the Gazette. However, the remaining sections will come into operation on a date of publication in the Gazette. I will talk about that at a later stage when I deal with the other questions. Honourable Masipa talked about the Law Society of South Africa that had a question with regard to the removal of the power from the board and to vest that power in the minister. Now, if you look at the provisions of Section 9, yes, it currently provides for that the board shall make, has the power to make regulations. However, if you look at other legislation, for instance, if you look at the Sectional Titles Act, if you look at the Sectional Titles Act, Act 95 of 1986, if you look at the Electronic Deeds Registration Systems Act, at Section 5, if you look at Section 24C of the Upgrading of Land Tenure Rights Act, in all of those legislation, the power is given to the minister to make the regulations. However, the boards, like in the Sectional Titles Act, you have the Sectional Titles Regulation Board. That board makes recommendation to the minister. The board is represented by the Banking Association of South Africa. It's represented by the relevant Council of Architects, the Council of Land Surveyors, etc. And they all are experts in their field. And they come up with proposals and they make recommendations to the minister for amendment to the Act. The same is with the upgrading of land tenure rights. There is also the minister makes the regulations. And with the Deeds Registries Act, we want to basically align those provisions with the provisions of the other legislation, as I mentioned. Also, if you look at the legislation that is being administered by the Department of Human Settlements, the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act, the Community Service Ombud Act, there is a board established in Section 24 of Act 8 of 2011, that is your Sectional Title Schemes Management Act, and that board also makes recommendations to the Minister of Department of Human Settlements. And it's then actually the minister that is making the regulations. So we basically just want to align. We're not taking any powers. We're just basically making it clear, or we want to align it with the provisions of the other legislation that the board, and the boards are represented by expert, by people with expert knowledge. And then they make recommendations to the minister. And it is actually then the minister that provides, and the government notice that is to be published, the minister then makes the regulations. Honorable Masipa also talked about Section 3 that provides for the recordal now of land tenure rights by a registrar of deeds without the enabling legislation being in place. It was also the thinking of the department, if we bring this, if we extend the duties of a registrar of deeds to attend to the recordal of these rights, but we replace that enactment of that provision on ice, and to bring it to enact that provision once the enabling legislation is in place. We all know how long it is to take a bill through Parliament. If we wait for the enabling legislation to be promulgated and then again amend the Deeds Registries Act, that may be take another couple of years then to again come back to Parliament with an amendment to the Deeds Registries Act then to amend Section 3. So it was also the thinking of the department to be proactive, let's bring it into the Deeds Registries Act, but we put those provisions on ice, the enactment of those provisions on ice until the enabling legislation has been promulgated. There was a question by Honourable Member Kappa with regard to a legislation of the TBV countries. I don't know if I understand or understood the question. I can just mention also that there are proclamations, etc., that provide for the issuing of PTOs, your permissions to occupy, quitrents, etc. Those are land tenure rights that are issued by traditional leaders or councils. For instance, a traditional leaders may, on local level, issue certain land tenure rights, quitrents, etc. Now, the first phase that the Deeds Office is currently busy with now with the development of the electronic deeds registration system is to provide for those quitrents and PTOs to be captured into the EDRS system. So those recordals are not taking place by the Registrar of Deeds, as we now envisage with the amendment of Section 3. Those are tenure rights that are issued under other legislation, under other proclamations. However, now in the first phase of the electronic system, we are going to provide for the capturing of those already issued rights, the quitrents. We're going to provide for the electronic capturing of those rights into the EDRS system. That will also then to get now to the next member, Member Mbata, that's it, that we explore the ways to protect the rights of those thousands of members out there. There are many people out there that's got unprotected rights, Member Mbamba stated. And what is the department doing to protect those rights? Have we explored means? So that is now where we are now with the first phase of the EDRS. It's basically to provide for the capturing of those rights into the EDRS, just so that we can also have a database with regard to a right that has already been issued on a local level by the traditional leaders. I just want to see what else. Honourable Member Motsoaledi was talking also about the regulation board. What was the rationale about the amendment of amending Section 9 now to move that power from the board to the minister? Like I say, we just want to align that Section 9. We want to align with Section 54 of the Sectional Titles Act. That Section 54 provides for the minister to make regulations upon recommendation by the board. So the minister cannot make regulations without the recommendation of the board. It must be recommendations by the board to the minister, and then the minister making those regulations. The same process to be followed in terms of Section 5 of Act 19 of 2019, the Electronic Deeds Registration Systems Act. The board will make recommendations to the minister. And the same, of course, then the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act that has been is administered by the Department of Human Settlements, as well as the Community Schemes Ombudsman Act, Act 8 and Act 9 of 2009. So it's basically just to align Section 9 of the Deeds Registries Act with other legislation. The chairperson also had questions with regard to the composition of the board. Let me just get to my bill. As I stated, the Deeds Registries Act on a Business Trading Account, Section Regulation 84 of the Act contains a whole schedule of fees of office. And it provides different fees that must be paid for different types of registration. Your deed of transfer for property up to an amount of 1 million will attract this fee, cancellation of a bond, etc. There is that schedule of fees. And once a year, the board sits, and our at the Office of the Chief Register of Deeds, the senior financial officer will give a presentation at the board. The board is represented by members of the Legal Practice Council, etc., and they all look at the increase, if it is justified, etc. So due to that operation of that fee account, as well as due to the development of this, the EDRS system, there was a need identified then for members with expert knowledge on financial issues and ICT issues to form part of a membership of the board. So Section 9 is now being amended to provide for the senior financial officer in the Office of the Chief Register of Deeds, also the senior financial officer of a national treasury. There will also be BASA, a member from the Banking Association of South Africa. They will be members of the board. Then there will also be a member from a conveyancer from the Office of the State Attorneys will be a member. And then the Chief Director of ICT will also be a member. So it is basically, it is an increase of membership. But then, of course, the Section 9 also provides for departmental officials will not receive remuneration with regard to attendance of the board. It's only members like your Law Society members and your BASA members that are receive remuneration with regard to the hours of preparation, and of course, and the fee that is payable to those members are also done in consultation with our minister and the Minister of National Treasury. So there is the increase with regard to the the BASA member and then the member of the official of the State Attorney's Office. Let me just see the tagging. The Office of the Chief State Law Advisors can maybe talk about the tagging with regard to the bill. As like I say, those sections that deal with the recorder of land tenure rights, those provisions are put on ice until the enabling legislation is in place. So I think it is my opinion that when the enabling legislation, if, for instance, your communal land rights bill is to talk about these issues, then the SAYAS of the Communal Land Tenure Right Bill will have to talk to the recordal issues. For instance, who is going to be your competent authority to issue these rights? The creation, which rights? Is it going to be over state land? Is it going to be over private land? Can anybody apply for a land tenure right to be recorded in the deeds office? Those questions that were asked, that will be have to address in the enabling legislation, because the branch deeds registration does not have answers to those questions. That will have to be addressed in tenure legislation that will probably be drafted by our tenure branch. And I don't know if it is going to be addressed in the land, a communal land tenure bill. Deeds did ask the question, and it did not appear to be the communal land tenure right bill when we did raise that question. But I think the tagging of the communal land tenure right bill, once it contains these matters, that will then result in a Section 76 bill. But due to this bill being technical, basically, and only providing full recordal and registration issues, we did not, and I think that's why the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors did not tag it a 76 bill. I just want to address the amendment. Also, the chairperson asked, can anybody apply for the recordal of a tenure right? Now, that's also a question I can't answer at this stage. I know with the upgrading of Land Tenure Rights in terms of the ULTRA Act, your upgrading of Land Tenure Rights Act provides for opening of townships, and on the date of opening of townships, certain of those rights are automatically converted into full title. Although that is now also being amended to provide for an application first to be made to the minister for upgrading into ownership. But Section 2.2 of the ULTRA Act provides for a register of deeds to record and to endorse title deeds with regard of the upgrading of that right into full ownership. So we've had an inquiry just 2 weeks ago of a person that also wants to know from the Office of the Chief Register of Deeds, can he bring his title? I think he's got a leasehold that needs to be endorsed in terms of Section 2.2 of the ULTRA Act to reflect on his title deed that it has been upgraded. And we did invite that person and said, yes, Section 2 of ULTRA does provide for a person basically just to walk into an act, into a deeds office, and the Register of Deeds will then endorse. And in that specific case, it's endorsed in terms of Section 2.2 of the ULTRA Act. A Register of Deeds will then endorse that title deed to reflect that that title deed, that leasehold, is now being upgraded into full ownership. So the same, if our enabling legislation provides for that, then a person will be able to walk with his land tenure right into the deeds office, and a Registrar of Deeds will then, without the need of charging for office fees, endorse that deed, a title or that leasehold to reflect that it's now converted into full ownership. Rightfully, the chairperson mentioned there is no legislation that deals with a dispute resolution, mechanism resolutions. And also, the chairperson raised other questions with regard to other sections that is not being addressed in the presentation. If you look at the bill right after the schedule, there is a memorandum on the optics of the bill. And the chairperson asked the question why the amendment to section 62 of the Act. Now, I just want to page clause 9 of the bill deals with the amendment of section 62 of the Act. Now, section 2 of the Act deals with the registration of notarial deeds, notarial bonds. And currently the Act provides for a notarial bond must be registered in the area of the jurisdiction of the deeds office in respect of which the person that wants to register a bond in the area of which he resides, his residential address is, as well as in the area of which the debtor carries on business. So it may be that a person lives in Cape Town, but he carries out business throughout the country. And then Section 62 currently provides that if in such an instance, the notarial bond must be registered, let's say in Cape Town Deeds Office then, within a period of 30 days from the date of attestation of that notarial deed by the notary public. But then Section 62 now also provides that that same bond must be registered in all the other deeds registries and the areas in which this debtor is carrying out business. So if he's carrying out business in all the other deeds office, Section 62 provides then for registration of the deeds office then in a further period of 30 days in the second Deeds Registries Act, and then in a further period of 30 days in the next deeds office. So it's very ambiguous to interpret the wording of Section 62. So it's basically, if I now just want to go and look at the, it's just to clarify the position with regard to that further 30 days. It is now being amended to say that the notarial bond shall be registered within the first deeds registry within a period prescribed by Section 1, which is now your 30 days from date of attestation. And then it will be amended to say in the second deeds registry with an additional period of 4 months from the date of its registration in the first deeds registry, and in each successive registry with an additional period of 4 months within such extended period, or as the court may on application prescribe. So it is just basically the procedure stays the same. It's just to clarify the period of time in the of registration of the bond in the next deeds office. So that was the rationale behind the whole amendment of Section 62. If I can just go to the chairperson's query with regard to the amendment of Section 10 of the Act. Now, as I said, Section 10 of the Act contains the whole list of subjects in respect of which the board currently may make regulations, or if it is going to be amended in terms of which the board then may make recommendations to the minister for amendment. Also to be proactive, the department deemed it necessary at this stage to also provide then for the board to make a recommendation to the minister for the manner in which certain forms and applications and consents must be drafted. For instance, if a person wants to now apply for the recorder of your land tenure right, or want to apply for a certificate of land tenure right to be issued, or for the cancellation of your land tenure right. So those forms will have to be prescribed by regulation in the Deeds Registries Act. So also to be proactive, we brought that amendment into Section 10. But of course, as I stated, Clause 14 of the bill provide for all these clauses that deals with recordal to be put on ice until such time your enabling legislation is promulgated. And then, of course, the department will request the president to issue notification for those clauses, those sections that deal with recordal to come into operation. I don't know if I have addressed all questions. If members can just maybe point out, But I don't know if the Chief Registrar of Deeds or any other official in the department want to make further a presentation or answer further questions to just clarify the matter on the recordal of land tenure rights. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama Reynolds, for your responses. Any other responses from the department?
Chairperson, this is Edgar Liefkies and the Chief Registrar speaking. I'm trying to switch on my camera, but it does indicate to me that this device is unable to access my camera. My apologies for that. I think Ms. Reynolds has responded to the questions excellently, in my opinion. Maybe I must just again speak, and I hope I'm not repeating that what she has said. But the deeds registration system have in the past been criticized quite a lot that it doesn't cater for the rights of all citizens in our country, and that there's a need to transform the deeds registration system. And the recordal process is an attempt towards that transformation that is required. And hopefully there will be a day in time in the future where the system will actually be able to have all rights reflecting in it and can be accessed for information and also provide proper information for government purposes when that is required, for example, in land audits, etc. I know that there are initiatives now in our department where they want to pilot recordals in certain provinces to test also the how it will be recorded, etc. And from the pilots, there will then, of course, be decisions made that will inform the enabling legislation that will be drafted by the land tenure component of our department. And that is what was attempted. The rest of it, I don't have anything additional to what Mr. Reynolds has said. I just want to say that government officials on our board normally do include also persons from NGMS, the Surveyor General's Office, etc., or from legal, but it is officials that is approved by the minister also to serve on our board when we sit. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. And members of portfolio committee.
Thank you, honorable members. Those are the responses from the deeds registry. Any further follow-up questions? If not, let me take this opportunity, honorable members, to thank you all for availing yourselves for today's meeting, as we were dealing with the Plant Health Phytosanitary Bill, as well as that of the Deeds Registry Bill, Amendment Bill. I would like to point it out, honorable members, that both these bills are with the committee and having been brought before the committee now, and according to the rules, after the first briefing which we have had today,
the next step for the portfolio committee according to National Assembly rules is for us to call for public participation. I'm informed by the secretariat that they have worked on the adverts for the two bills which they would look to wanting to proceed in tabling the adverts for the two bills. We are still waiting on the animal protection bill to see if we will be proceeding once we engage on the issue of desirability on that, but it is also another bill we may be able to put out an advert on and proceed. But I must say, honorable members, that we would like to request from the department to send to the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural and Reform and Rural Development a budget breakdown on how they are planning to cover the shortfall to implement the bill, including the reports of the study which Mr. Serache has mentioned. With that said, honorable members, we look forward to trying to process as much of the legislation as we have before us so that we can get it through before the close of our term. We will navigate accordingly and see how best we get to concluding on these bills. That was all, honorable members, on our agenda. I want to again remind honorable members that on Wednesday, we were requested to send nominations for the ARC, which you can do through the secretariat no later than 4 o'clock today. Those that will have names to submit, we can be able to then have them sent accordingly on behalf of the honorable members. Honorable members, that concludes the business of the day. And I would like to thank you all for having participated in this meeting and wish you a happy Friday. Do enjoy a great weekend ahead and get some time to relax and spend with your loved ones. I want to thank the officials of the department for having been able to participate and be with us today, and also thank the Deeds Registry for availing themselves and for participating in today's presentation and responses that they've been able to afford us. That concludes the business of the day, and the meeting stands adjourned, honorable members.
Matibang.